Good day, big boys and girls, parents and grandparents, teachers, and everyone interested in AI and robotics. I'm Anastasia with The Real Romy, and we are here with the show AI Snacks with Romy and Robbie, a podcast for AI muggles, not wizards. Together with my guests, I translate AI and robotics from difficult to easy to understand. And today, my guest is Mike Riscala, and we discuss AI in a children's room. Mike is an award-winning entrepreneur who has a very unusual career. And there's one fun fact here. He started his career as a musician, and he was touring the globe with a band. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
And could you please tell us a little bit about your path and how did you end up developing this content and toy platform for children?
Yeah, for sure. It actually started with my wife being pregnant with our first child back in 2014. And I had this moment that many fathers have where they panic. So essentially, I was terrified. I was thinking to myself, you know, how can I be a dad? My dad is dad. I'm not a dad. I'm still the kid. And at that point, I started to think a little bit more about what I was doing in my career. You know, I was CEO of a product company. We were doing very well. But I was thinking more about legacy and how my daughter would view what we were doing in the future. And at that point, something happened. And I decided to basically pursue the new, something that we could leave a legacy and a mark on the world. And when we started to research what was happening around the world, in all the labs around the world, we started to notice that there were some series of innovations that were bubbling up that together combined meant that robotics could actually commercialize. And it was a big aha moment. And at that point, I invested a couple $1 million and opened up a robotics lab to the terror of everyone around me, you know, and we started to invest in, you know, what we believed to be the human interaction experience for machines. How would we engage? What would we want that engagement to feel like? And the truth is I fell in love. I completely fell in love. Back in 2019, 2020, end of 2019 was when we actually decided. So after 10, you know, after that number of years, we actually decided that what our first go-to-market product was going to be. And that essentially was Snorbal.
This is actually a very interesting story because when AI started, before the first AI winter, which came after the 60s, people expected robots to take over the world, not AI applications and software. And now we waited for decades before real applications realized. And there are very few consumer-facing companies developing robots which are really accepted by families. So what is currently the stage of your business? Are you shipping your products?
Yes, we are actually. We're actually sold out. We shipped all of our initial units out to our pre-order customers. So back in 2022, we ran an Indiegogo campaign and essentially invited people to participate in our journey. Excuse me. And at that time, essentially, we spent the next couple years preparing, getting it ready, and then we shipped just back in at the end of 2023. And now we're officially sold out, and we're waiting to move to the next stage of our business. We're getting ready for mass market commercialization.
And could you please dissect for us the technology stack of your product? So starting with hardware first and then moving into software. And I'm really interested in how do you interact with Snorbal and what type of neural language processing technology is behind your robot?
Yeah. So our technology stack is very robust, in part because we have a few things that are kind of working together, you know. So a few things to call out first. We have our own proprietary projector. Our projector emits no blue light in order to make sure we have no negative cognitive stimulus for children, right? You know, in generating a product, there's a couple things that are a bit different than just dealing with a technology innovation, which a lot of companies in our space have basically been like, hey, we have a new technology. Let's figure out how to use it, right? We didn't do that. We kind of went in a proper product life cycle, right? So we really looked at the things that were important to parents. First thing, first things first, parents are very concerned, obviously, with privacy and security. but they're also concerned with, from my perspective, the use of technology. You know, like I don't want my kids using tablets and using phones all the time. And part of it is that they're locked into tunnel vision, you know, that tunnel vision type scenario, but also the negative stimulus that they get from doom scrolling or from, you know, the blue screens, like those types of things. So even back, you know, in 2019, 2020, we actually started listing off our critical success factors. What's important to families? And, you know, blue light is a thing that for me is very important. I don't want that extended usage of blue light, right? So we designed our own proprietary projector. And then the other thing that we really wanted to get to was bringing a character to life. So even in terms of the form factor, we use curved surfaces. We use soft, you know, and even like the food grade silicone, it's very soft to your skin. That's part of the approach in order to make it more attainable. So basic gist is that, you know, we had a series of other things that were involved with the tech stack too. Like one of the things to take note is we developed an entire IoT infrastructure.
Yes.
The reason why is that it's the idea that these technologies together can create these magical experiences. So we have, you know, a character-led product through Snorable. And then through a series of extension products, we can actually carry the story across different things in order to make the experience more magical, but also to create longevity. You know, part of the thing with children, as we all know, is that they get bored. So the aspect of new content, being able to unlock things, you know, using game mechanics in order to, from a software perspective, using game mechanics in order to help them see their achievement, positive motivation, those types of things will yield an outcome where they use things for longer times, right? So, so in terms of our tech stack, you know, we're using Python, you know, as part of our lead system for our player. We have a no code system that's built on the Noodle platform called Experience the Magic, where we develop characters. We're using AWS in terms of our cloud services when we do open up connections for updating, you know. But on the device, we're actually using a MediaTek Genio i350 in terms of our processor, right? And we actually do all of our NLP directly on the device. The device is completely closed. The only way that we open it up is when we do updates. And that's part of our strategy for privacy and security. There are no cameras in Snorable. We actually use radar and a series of different sensors. Our sensors include like climate sensor, light sensor, accelerometer. We have a 4-mic array, so we can do speaker recognition. All these things combined together. But really, the whole purpose behind the tech stack is to create an enhanced user experience. So everything is actually qualified with that. And that's the funny part. You know, when you look at product development and what I've seen even from some of the other folks in the industry who have, you know, raised tons of money, built amazing things, but not things for people. It's things to prove out a technology concept or to say, hey, eventually this will do this thing. You know, I don't think consumers want that. I think what consumers want is, you know, something that will actually enhance their lives and you know, the lives of their children and their families.
You know, actually, there are three points I would like to come after listening to you. First, so MediaTek technology within the Snorable. Am I right with the hypothesis that this allows you to keep your production costs really down?
Yes. Yeah, so the processor is under $15, to put that in perspective.
Yeah, which is fantastic, of course. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And as a consumer-facing business, doing AI on the edge, so obviously Snorable is a robot, it's an edge device like a phone or a sensor. Doing AI on the edge is not a piece of cake. So there is a very known, very famous consumer-facing company, Apple, which mastered AI not in the cloud, but on the edge device. What are difficulties to do AI on an edge device?
So there's difficulties and there's also advantages. The advantages is the lack of latency. You know, we actually have the ability to not transmit up to the cloud, process, send down, and then react. That's actually four steps. If you do it on device, you save two of those steps, right? And that actually, you know, is a major advantage. Beforehand, you know, we have 5G now and things are getting faster and faster, but still not instantaneous, right? So that's an advantage. The disadvantage is obviously you're constrained by the amount of processing power that you have. And then also you have to create things in a way that don't essentially use up the majority of your processor. I mean, I remember when we first started back in 2019, the very first critical success factor that we had to overcome was we have to make this work on low cost processors. Yeah, because at the end of the day, we can put a very expensive processor in Snorkel, but no one's going to buy it. And that's what a lot of folks were doing. They were using very expensive processors, and then even then, still connecting to the cloud, which, you know, I didn't totally understand that, why people would do that. But for us, what we wanted to do was we wanted to make something that would be commercially viable, would have a footprint. So when we made that decision initially, we actually hired a series of brilliant PhDs. And the first and only objective was make this work on something even more lightweight than a quad-core processor. We used the lowest, most lightweight processor we could get, which at the time was a Raspberry Pi Zero, right? In order to test. And they were like, this is not going to work. And I said, well, let's figure out how we can make it work. You know, what are we really trying to do here? And when we got it to work, I mean, it wasn't pretty, but we got it to work, and we could see the path. Then knowing that we're going to move up to a quad core gave us lots of room. Right now, we have tons of room in terms of processing power to do new things, which gives us much more longevity for the children and for their families.
And how is Transformer architecture help you in developing your technology? So did things become easier when you started to operate with the scarcity in mind without abundance of computational power?
Yeah, that's a very good question. You know, so one of the things that we took note was because we started right before COVID, and then there was the global shipping crisis, and then there was like... It was to some point I was like, how could this be? What is God telling me not to do this? What is going on? Every single possible punch in the face we could have got, we got at a different point. But the beauty was, and this was really interesting, MediaTek became a real champion for us. I got to call them out like directly. You know, we had a group, Stefan and his team at MediaTek. What they did for us was they basically ensured us that no matter what, we were always going to get priority because they believe that this was part of the future home. You know, they believe that this is a category that is going to be something very special. And they really supported us in every capacity. So with that, we didn't have issues per se around the microchips. We had other issues, of course, but not around the chipset, which is where everyone kind of leaned into.
And in terms of software technology, so what I'm looking into is this architecture to do NLP in a different way, since those LLMs evolved and emerged. So did it help to develop Snorbal, or did you take another path to develop its linguistic capabilities?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. So we have built our own on top of standard models like everybody else, but we have our own secret sauce. There's some things that we're doing that are a bit different. So one, in order to achieve ultimate privacy, we actually can't see what the family is saying at all. There's an abstraction layer that's been added in, right? And the only thing, the way that Snorbal works is that it basically almost to how Snorbal would see it, it's almost like it's a, I don't know, are you familiar with Charlie Brown? Did you ever see those Charlie Brown episodes with the, that's a very American, I guess. So Charlie Brown had these teachers that would always talk, parents and teachers, so it would always sound like, and they would always make this, you never understood what they were saying, but then Charlie Brown would respond to them, right? That's kind of what Snorbal's doing, right? Snorbal's an unknown layer and then sees the word, sees the trigger. And then the trigger creates the activity. And it is more challenging to do that. But the reason why that's important is it allows the family to have complete autonomy. right? So, you know, it's the same reason why we picked radar, right? Radar, you know, we can kind of understand who's in the room. We can understand what's happening, but we can't see someone in their underwear or, you know, in that way. And that privacy is very valuable for families. And that is also harder, right? That is also harder. Of course, it's easier to use cameras. Everyone's building models around cameras, everybody, right? Not so much around radar, you know? So we had to do a lot of legwork in order around our NLP and then also around the cameras to make privacy and safety. The second thing is nobody is training their models to understand young children. We've forgotten about the child in the home, right? So you have these wonderful products, you know, that we have. Almost all of us have either a Google Home or Amazon Alexa or some form of in-home IoT device, IoT hub. But the reality is those don't actually respond to half of the people in the home, if not more, right? So our whole focus was we have to make sure that Snorbel puts the child at the center of the experience. And we've actually been working on our model in a way, leveraging linguistics experts and all kinds of wonderful people in order to translate toddler speak and to create our baby toddler and translation system. So that's also part of the tech stack and what we're doing.
So, you know, when you were describing the technology stack, so all you were saying was leading me to this assumption, what you built is really human-centric or child-centric, and you could give a lecture on what this human-centric really means.
Yes.
And actually, a lot of people are talking about it, but you can translate this abstract concept into a real product. So if you give a lecture to students and they ask you, what does it mean to build a human-centric product? How would you answer this?
You have to put love and joy into the aspect of creation. That's the part that people miss. When you are successful in creating a product, part of it is because you actually care about the outcome of the other person. You're not directly focused on the business objective as the ideal first position. And the truth is that if you do that, you will create something special for that other person on the other side. The other thing to take note is don't try to boil the ocean. You know, you're not trying to, you know, break the laws of physics in order to create a product. What you need to do is look at what is available, figure out how far you can push it, and then really think about how you can leverage that technology to yield the outcome that's important for those individuals that are using it. You know, for us, we have, I like to say this often, when we measure success, we don't measure it in typical KPIs. You know, like we're not looking at, okay, well, user stats or blah, blah, blah. We measure in joy and laughter. And that is how we know we are successful. You know, if you talk to any of the parents, you know, in a first go-to market, there's always things that you hope that you would make a little better, or, you know, especially when you're squeezed and you need to get something out, you know, there's things that you kind of let go. But the aspect of what we always hear back on Snorbel, even if there are things that we need to improve, the things we always hear back is, wow, this is adorable. My daughter or my son loves this, right? Loves this character, loves this, you know, they hug it, they kiss it, and you can see the connection that they have to the product, right? So that gives you a lot of leeway, you see?
Yeah, I understand this, but how much unclarity did you face first when you started filling the gaps and actually picking technology solutions to build the whole stack?
Yeah.
So obviously, the language is an issue because people don't understand accents, and I'm not going into toddler's speech now.
Yeah.
So then I'm aware that Snorbel reacts to the noise and to the sounds. If a dog is barking, Snorbel will recognize it's an animal in the room. So what were the unknown and how did you fill the gaps?
The unknowns were really around whether or not we could develop an algorithm that would understand young children. That was a major unknown. Mm-hmm. So and then the other major unknown was, could we have this work on low-cost processors directly on device, right? The third piece was, could we build and leverage these sensors to create an understanding of environmental conditions, you know? And what we did was very early on, we proved that we could do those things. And that was our first go. That was our first test before we get, like, you know, a typical product process, good product processes, especially in innovation. Innovation's different. You know, when you're dealing with production, you're just going through the motions. With innovation, you're kind of like, we don't know. You know, we have a thesis that we're trying to establish the result from. So when we started, we took our three hardest elements, which was, can we make an algorithm that understands young children? That was one. Can we make it work on low cost? We took those things and we tested them first. And what we found was, as soon as we overcame some of those challenges and we saw a clear path, that's when we opened up the gate for next level investment. And, you know, yeah, and that's actually the right way to do it. A lot of times for innovative products or, you know, innovation in general, when you're doing deep tech or any of those type things, you'll see that the thesis is kind of established, but the path to get to the outcome may not have done any formal process yet. And typically what happens is when a company receives, let's say, $10 million in investment or $100 million, there's big numbers that are involved in some of these frontier tech products. What happens is that the investment goes in without establishing essentially the gates, right? When do you unlock? You know, we started, our investment was between myself and my business partner. We put in $100,000, $50,000 each, right? And we said, we're not sure if we're going to get to the outcome, but this is what we're willing to risk in order to test our first steps. And then we put in and we said, okay, this is interesting. There's some data back. Let's put in a little bit more. And then we started bringing other investors into the mix once we felt comfortable with the aspect that we could achieve those goals.
And did some scientific research come out of your efforts? Because I can imagine that these are interesting data points which might excite neuroscientists, for example, researching child's brain, educational pathways, neuroplasticity in children. Is there any collaboration between research facilities and your company?
We're looking to establish that now. We're talking to some wonderful people at the Al Khalifa University. We're talking to some folks at the Michigan State Hospital. Like, there's a number of different groups that we're talking to at this time that are very interested in how we can leverage this technology in certain ways.
This is very interesting. And obviously, if parents adopt Snorable to their homes, mm-hmm. they trust. So could we talk a little bit about trusting a product, trusting a product maker? So what are typical questions you are hearing from the groups of parents when you have your discussions and receive feedback?
Yeah, there's some fear around AI because basically the understanding is, and the way that AI is being positioned right now, is almost like instead of a teacher, use AI. Instead of the parent, use AI. That is crazy. You know, it's just people are out of their mind. You know, I've even talked to individuals and I've seen individuals post on LinkedIn and other things where they're talking about how they're leveraging AI to help with their relationship advice. And you know, that's interesting, but I wouldn't recommend it. You know, you don't want something that's generative that's using data points to kind of give you back generic answers around your life or around major decisions or around things that are really impactful. You know, would you let generative AI have surgery on you right now? Like, that's,
you know. Look, I am very kind of, you know, very foreign to this concept of trusting Gen AI per se, because it's not about language, it's about tokens. Yeah. So if I know that it takes, let's say, text, right, and it decomposes the text into tokens and then reassembles tokens with some statistical processing into what we believe is language, I mean, this is not a conversation for me. This is not something I will be taking advice from, right? But I'm more than willing to consult what type of, I don't know, video tutorial should I suggest to students if I teach computer vision, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and so here's what we've done. We're not generative. you know, and I do love the technology. Like, I think it's going to lead into something really wonderful eventually. However, I believe very strongly that the infrastructure to the generative AI movement is completely flawed.
Yes. You know,
one of the things that I talk about quite often, and it wasn't popular. It's still not that popular. It's becoming more popular. I remember before when I said, hey, we're doing everything on device, and people are like, well, that's crazy. Why wouldn't you just put it up in the cloud? You know, it's like, it's way better. And then you can have those, you have a lot of, you know, people are building other things and you just use their thing. And I was like, well, that's crazy. Why would we do that for young kids? Are you crazy? Right? You know, but investors, other technologists, I heard it all the time. And then we saw the result. You know, almost every one of the companies that was leveraging that technology has had some major challenge, you know, and even though they've made some wonderful things with what they've done, in the end, even just supporting and paying for the amount of data that's being used crushed their companies.
Yeah.
Terrible, right?
Yeah.
So we went the other way, and it was challenging. It was way more challenging from getting investment in. There was a lot of issues around that. The aspect of the infrastructure is very simple. If you have to use so much data to get to a baseline technology in order to do something for you, specifically for you, well, what is that really saying about the infrastructure that's been created? Is it really just statistical, you know, crunching in order to give you an outcome? Or is there an actual level of understanding or a level of context that's being developed in order to give you your answers, right? So we believe, and what I strongly believe is that there is a new development that's going to happen, and there has been some research in it, and it is moving, where it's more about developing context. Every single AI that will be generated will essentially be created around you and your perspective, right? Have a baseline and then evolve, and it will be different. Your device will be different for you than for me, really different at fundamentally. And that's okay. That's exactly how it should be, because we are different.
I am very grateful that you are saying this, because it brings me actually to a thought that we might teach differently when we teach computer science and engineering, because those engineers who work on small data must ask very precise questions and be more diligent in formulating the working hypothesis prior than just throwing bunch of stuff on a model and expecting some outcome and then narrowing down to a certain data point. So there are maybe different skills to think about questions than to accept some answers which might be accidental.
Yes. And that's part of the thing. Like, what I feel has happened in the last bunch of years is that we got to a point where we have a fantastic proof of concept. You know, when OpenAI started and they really kicked in this kind of Gen AI movement, that's not new technology, by the way. That's been around for years and years.
Yeah.
Right? But they were able to fundamentally take a step forward to creating something that's valuable. That, to me, was a proof of concept. And I believe what's happened is we've developed on that proof of concept to a point of almost insanity. You know, if you take $2 billion to train something, just to train it, what are we doing? how is that a fundamentally 18 months, $2 billion? Let's say they get it down to 1 month and, you know, $500 million. Still,
that's crazy.
Just, it doesn't make sense. Fundamentally, yeah. It doesn't make sense, right? So how do we adapt that brilliant step forward in order to create something that actually has real value? That's kind of where my headspace is. And I know it's an unpopular opinion, especially in the AI world. People would you know, they probably hang me by my feet.
Especially, don't worry. And actually, I think roboticists might love you because the scarcity of resource because of this form factor of a robot, be it a little egg-like snorble, be it a bigger device, right? But yes, there is always the scarcity depending on the shape of a robot. But can we go back to children and putting this device in the middle of a family?
Yes.
What is your vision on companions, robot companions or AI companions? Those might be agent software in developing children and giving parents some advice, probably controlled advice, on how to develop great habits, how to teach kids. So what is your vision there?
So my vision is very simple. I don't believe that any device should replace a teacher, a parent. Like, I think that again, is crazy. These are tools. So really what we need to do is empower parents to basically use these tools in a way that yields the best result for their children. And that's essentially what we did with Snorble. When you actually go on to Snorble, we have a companion app. The app allows the parent to establish what's important for them and their families. And they can actually decide, hey, my child needs a little bit more of this or needs a little bit more of that. And as the device plays with the child and the child is at the center, the child commands the device and has fun interactions and does things, it will start to yield and kind of lean more towards the things that are important based off of what the parent believes. That is the right way to do it, in my opinion, right? When a parent is looking at technology and they're looking at what to use and, you know, what kind of things to use, there is an inherent fear. You know, we've seen a lot of parents say, we're going to remove all technology. It's got to go, you know, also terrible idea, right? In my opinion, right? Because basically at the end of the day, your kids are going to grow up in a world filled with things that we can't even imagine yet.
Yeah.
We need to empower them with the right tool set. We need to give them the right outcomes. So a lot of it comes down to looking at things that are creating a negative impact. Blue screens, doom scrolling, like that type stuff is no good. Social media, no good. Absolutely. No good for kids, right? And then using things that actually yield an outcome for good. You know, I was part of the, I went to a lot of the original AI for social good summits, right? How do we leverage technology to stop things like human trafficking? How do we use technology to solve dealing with major diseases or identifying a critical, influenza or something that's happening around the world? How do we do those things? And the thing that's amazing is that technology, when used for good, is incredibly powerful. You know, don't we all want our kids to be advanced, to have better outcomes for their lives, right? So when you look at which companies to support, which products to support, you can't just leave your child with the tech. You have to observe and be part of that experience with them. And then decide for yourself, is this the viable pathway for them? Is this something that's good for them?
And actually, you took this, in my eyes, very smart step to develop a content lab in your company, which is probably separate from the engineering team. Could you describe what is going on in this content lab?
Yes. So we have some of the greatest minds in the world. We have PhDs from MIT, Stanford, Harvard. We have some of the most brilliant content developers you could ever imagine, people that have worked on The Care Bears and Teen Titans Go and, you know, and all these wonderful minds, brilliant creative minds, brilliant minds that are focused on the active education or child advocacy or these type things that are very, very important, right? And they work together completely separate from the developer. So our whole approach is, we use and we have this brilliant development team, and these are the builders. They essentially create empowerment. They create empowerment and these building blocks that then our creative and content and subject matter experts work together, and then they create the experiences, you see? And they're separate. When the enablement piece is made, it gets pushed over to our platform in which the content and the subject matter experts are able to use that enablement in order to create new and better experiences.
This is very interesting. And Mike, thank you so much for your time. So we are nearing the end of our conversation. And frankly, we can only scratch the surface. I would like to test the hypothesis with you because in April, I will put my thoughts on the paper and write an article on AI in education. And I was actually waiting to formulate an opinion because I wanted to see what is out there and what are the voices.
Yes.
A spoiler alert, I will say I'm all pro AI in education. There are two skills which I would start to teach from the very early age and actually continue no matter what a person might study, even in high school or at the university. And those skills are math and applied math and writing.
Yes, very good. Yeah.
Okay, so we are in an agreement on this. Yeah. Can Snorbel help kids to learn how to write and how to do math?
Absolutely. In fact, I'll tell you some examples of that. We have had parents reach out to us. And they have said very clearly, I would have paid $1,000 for this product prior to, you know, now that I have it, you know, and they were debating getting it at first because it's not expensive, but it's a little bit of an investment. It's not a throwaway toy. It's something that's going to last with your family, right?
Just give the price point to my audience.
Yes. Okay. So Snorbel by itself will be for sale for $249. Right now, it's for sale with its first accessory, which is the Lullapod, for $299.
And we are talking U.S. dollars.
U.S. dollars, yes, that's right.
Yeah.
So the thing about it is to take note is that when we first sent them out and we started getting our beta tests back and our feedback, I've had families reach out to me and said, my child has never been able to do the alphabet. I've been trying to get them to do it for a year. They just don't want mommy and daddy to do it. In 1 week, they now can recite the full alphabet and, in fact, even write the letters for the full alphabet. That's a crazy statement, you know? So we've heard that. We've heard counting, you know, children that couldn't count are now counting up to 10, back from 10, doing those type things. So we're seeing the results almost immediately. Because what happens is the child enjoys that first activity, and then they just want to do it over and over again, right? And then they move on to the next activity. It's led by them. And that's the difference, right? It's actually a Montessori theology. I don't know if you...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Their theory is, which is a brilliant approach. I love Montessori in terms of their approach. Their theory is we don't force the child. When the child shows interest, we double down, right? Same approach. So now when the child shows interest in that one thing... You're not trying to make it part of the, but when they show interest, they move in. And then the second thing, which is mega important, is routine.
Yeah.
Routine around establishing the things that are important. So education is important. So having an education routine, having a nighttime routine, having a morning routine, and establishing those as part of the flow of how you deliver the things that will increase the value, will give value to the child, will give value to their future. Is really, really part of the entire schema. So that's, I not only, believe, not only think it, I know it, we've seen it. You know, now the next stage for us in terms of our partners is to prove it.
Yeah. Well, obviously a lot of fantastic tech founders are Montessori scholars, like Larry and Sergey from Google.
Yes.
And maybe this is a good way to end this episode of AI Snacks with Romy and Robbie. And I thank everyone who tuned in to listen. Thank you for learning about AI because together we can make sure that AI is beneficial and transparent for all of us. Goodbye and see you next week.
Thank you.